You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Coming up on episode 41 of the RedCafe.net podcast, we'll be looking back at all the highs and lows of the past 10 months, and we put your questions to Viv Anderson in a special end of season interview.
Welcome to the RedCafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net or alternatively, post your opinion on the redcafe.net forums.
Well, welcome to what is going to be the final episode of the redcafe.net podcast for this season anyway. Dan Dove, how are you doing? Been quite a while since we last spoke.
Yeah, not too bad, Steve. Yeah, like you say, been quite a while. Few weeks now since we all got together and had a chat, but I've been fine, mate. How about you, Dov? How's it in Scotland?
It's nice and sunny.
It's sunny down here actually, Dov, as well tonight. It's unbelievable, really.
It's crazy. Last weekend I managed to get a little bit of a tan as well, and my mind's fried because of it. I don't know what's going on. I'm tempted to go on holiday, but then I'm just like, should I really go on holiday? I should really be taking advantage of the weather.
It's just because it's unusual, isn't it, really, I suppose.
It's good fun.
How are you, Steve? You all right?
Yeah, all good, yeah. Looking forward to the World Cup.
Of course.
Not sure how England are going to get on, but it should be interesting.
I'm sure we'll have a little talk about that later, but the two performances against Mexico and Japan weren't the best, were they?
Certainly weren't. We'll touch on that a bit later on. Well, we'll do a little season review then, just sort of going back over how we think the season went. Dan, just to sort of get us started, I mean, where do you think it's gone right and wrong in the grand scheme of things, just as sort of an overall summary?
Overall, I think that obviously the injuries over Christmas time, that they had quite an impact on us. And it affected our consistency, and Chelsea were more consistent over the season and, you know, probably deserved to win the league. Not saying they were a better team, but I just think that... they ground out a few more results than what we did. I mean, obviously, there's a few games that we'll highlight, you know, where we dropped points, which we should have, you know, picked up. But that happens in every season, and I think it's just, it's just the way it's gone this year. Chelsea have been stronger. We got pushed as well by Arsenal. They obviously faded away. But no complaints. Finishing second, only 1 point behind, so you can't really complain too much of that. And obviously winning the Carling Cup as well, which was a bonus.
Dan. Talked about Chelsea there. Losing to Chelsea twice was, well, you could say ultimately that's what's been the difference. I don't think Chelsea have been clearly that much better than us. They've just ground out results where we've struggled. Like if you look at the first half of the season, Burnley away, you remember back there, Carrick missing the penalty, 1-0 defeat. Fulham as well, we went through that little stage where we had a few bad results. Fulham away, we lost 3-0. Of course, Liverpool away, we lost 2-0 as well, and then the Chelsea game where John Terry popped up with that controversial winner. So first half of the season, like I say there's few results that didn't go our way, and of course losing twice to Chelsea over the season hasn't helped either.
I'd agree with those sentiments. I think really our pre-Christmas form cost us the title, you could say. I think it was 5 defeats overall. You did the highlight that the Fulham loss was just that was a catastrophe, to say the least. It was a horrible, horrible performance, possibly our worst of the season. And then obviously the injury crisis that Dan mentioned. One of the things that I would say maybe cost us was the Champions League, in a sense, because we lost, was it 5 games after coming off a Champions League game at the sort of during the week before, so that we lost. So I mean, That maybe shows a lack of squad depth, that every single time we play in the Champions League, more or less, we're getting beat the following game in the Premier League. I think the Everton game near the end of the season was another one to highlight as well. So there were definitely... I think I would say overall, being sort of optimistic, I think we had a good season. We won the Carling Cup. pushed Chelsea all the way, like last day of the season, although it was a bit of a sort of nailed on sort of Chelsea title victory. And obviously, we unluckily went out of the Champions League. So, I mean, I think all in all, with the resources that Fergie's had, we've done quite well.
Yeah, like you say, with the Champions League, we'll briefly touch on that. Dan, breezing through the group stages, I remember a Michael Owen hat-trick at one stage against Wolfsburg, and obviously dismantling Milan as well, especially at home. And as Dov said, I mean, the quarter-final against Bayern Munich, at the end of the day, it was just a bit of bad luck, wasn't it? I mean, if Raphael hadn't been sent off, obviously you had the Olic goal late on in the first half, didn't help matters. And then it just took an absolute wonder strike from Robin, didn't it, to win it in the end. So looking back, I can't really say we were that bad in the Champions League. And I think if we'd beaten, obviously if we'd beaten Bayern, we could have looked at I think Ferguson's talked about it, hasn't he, in his interviews. I mean, if we'd beaten Bayern, we'd have had Lyon in the semi-final, and then, well, if you can get past them, you never know. You obviously Inter in the final, but finals, you really don't know, do you? So it's just a bit of a shame that we lost out to Bayern.
Yeah, I mean, I think when we got drawn against Bayern Munich, a lot of United fans were saying, you know, oh, we're definitely through to the final now, looking at the way it was going to pan out. But like you say, a bit of bad luck, a bit of poor judgment in the first leg. Two mistakes, really, when Neville handballed the through ball, and then obviously with Evra being a bit unusual, really. You never really see him make mistakes like that. And it cost us at the end, you know, and obviously that hurt us. But, you know, second leg, decent performance, 3-0 up. And then, you know, like you say, Raphael getting sent off after the Olic goal, it just completely turned it. And no one could do anything about the Robin goal, but it's just the way it goes in European football, and credit to Bayern for going through. But I think Dov mentioned before about, you know, the fact that after European games we've come back and we've not done brilliantly. But I'm not sure it's down to squad depth. I just think it's just down to not believing in ourselves this season. I think there was only a few games where we really hit top notch, you know. So I think that it's just unlucky this season. And I think next season will be even better.
But do you not think, Dan, that the fact that we do believe in ourselves has really taken us further than we really should have went, given the squad that we have? Because I would say more that Fergie's got that instilled belief that Cernak gives us, which takes us to places where we shouldn't really be. Because if you go through the actual squad, it's like the squad isn't one of the best he's had, and he's really done quite fantastic with it.
Disgusting.
Yeah, I suppose he has, Dov. I mean, the fact that we brought in Michael Owen on a free transfer, and I thought he had a really good season for us from what we saw. And obviously there was no real major signings, so I don't think we overachieved, because at United you always want to be winning things, you know, the Premier League and Champions League. But to get Mighty like you think, it was a good season, and I think only next season we'll get stronger. Hopefully a few more signings will come through the door.
Well, yeah, you talk about signings, Dan. I mean, we've discussed it at some length over the last few episodes, but Dov, no one's really emerged, have they, as a genuine target for Ferguson at the moment? I know we're only early on in the summer, but who would you really, really pinpoint as the key player that we need to be bringing in? I would say David Silva looks to be the one. If we can splash out 20, 25 million on him, we may not really need anyone else. I mean, everywhere you look, the position seem to be strong. We've got a decent enough player for each position. And the one place we have lacked, that we've said in previous weeks, has been that central midfield position. And Silva, just beyond Rooney, or on the left wing alternatively, that could be a really, really decent acquisition.
No, definitely, Steve. I think you've sort of hit the nail on the head, saying that the midfield is probably the weakest area and somewhere we do need to strengthen. I would probably bring in a couple of players, though. I think David Silva is quality. Like, he can play across the front of the midfield there, so right, left, and through the centre. But obviously, you've got, like, I think we've got to take into consideration maybe financial constraints, because I don't think there is much money there. I mean, although it's been said by David Gill and Ferguson that they've got the Ronaldo money there, and obviously they'll have this season's transfer budget as well. But I just think, obviously, with the financial situation at the club's a bit more, a little bit deeper than what we've been led to believe and being told. So I would say maybe somebody like Joe Cole, I would like to see. I mean, he's 29 years old. I mean, he's a top quality player, technically gifted, English as well. So I mean, and we can get him on a free transfer. So I think somebody like that coming in, he can play on the left and through the centre and on the right as well. And I would maybe have somebody a bit more of a like a holding type player. I mean, we've been linked with Yaya Toure recently as well, and obviously Jack Rodwell. But I would go with somebody, I've said it before previously, Daniele De Rossi. He's actually came out and said in the last couple of weeks that if Roma needed to sell him to raise money because they're in financial trouble, then he would be willing to go. So I think making a bid for him would be great. I mean, because he's reasonably young, can hold a game, can control a game, and can also sort of link the play between sort of midfield and attack as well. So I mean, a couple of those players, I mean, I would be very, very happy with.
I'd quite like to see Joe Cole, but I don't know if he's already signed a contract with someone else. I read today that he might have. It's either us or Arsenal, but I think if we've signed him, I think it'll be really good. Maybe he won't start every game, but I think he'd start the majority of games.
Joe Cole and David Silva for you, Dan?
Yeah, why not? Why not? I mean, players like Ryan Giggs are coming to the end now. I imagine it'll be the his last season, probably, you know, as a first teamer. And you've got Nani on the other side of Valencia, so I think squad. I mean, Joe Cole is one of the players who you can play on the left, you play him on the right, or you can play him just behind the front two or front one. I think he'd be very good for us, and it'd be one over Chelsea as well, wouldn't it?
Certainly would. Well, we'll just take a couple of emails now before we move on to look at some of the real highlights of the season. We've got Ben Burnell. He's just emailed in with three players that he'd bring in and three he'd get rid of. He'd basically say Berbatov, Hargreaves and Michael Owen would be three he would get rid of, and Stephen Ireland, Karim Benzema and David Silva are the ones he'd bring in. Eddie Gillat on a similar line, he'd get rid of Michael Carrick and Berbatov as well, and he'd bring in Benzema and David Silva too. And he thinks if we can get both of them, and he thinks we've got a real chance of not just winning the league, but possibly a whole lot more too. And just finally, James McAllister, he's put a question to you guys. Who do we think from the current crop of reserve team players has got the best chance of sort of stepping up and being more involved in the first team next season?
Well, I don't know. I'll grab that one. Does Kiko Makeda count as a reserve team player? Because I think next season he's really going to come on. His season was a bit disrupted with injuries just past there. So I think if he gets a season without so much injury problems, I think he could become a big player for us. I think he's hugely talented. And I think it's about time we produced a striker from the reserve ranks to come through. So he's one I would keep an eye on. Also like Ekrem as well. I think if he gets some more first team action, he could be one that could really come on too. But I mean, I would say those two, Ekrem set pieces as well. I think something that we lack is a good set piece specialist that we haven't had, obviously, since Ronaldo left. So I think somebody like that to be brought in as well would be pretty good.
Josh King maybe could be one, you know, a young striker, maybe not necessarily first team. But then you've got the likes of Diouf who could come in. He's been playing a lot of reserve team football. So I think there are some teams, some players that can definitely impress.
Was it Richie De Laet who won the reserve player of the year, was it? I think he's possibly, if he wants to play him at left back and sort of give Ever a few games rest next season, he could come in maybe and play a role. And it'd be interesting to see how Tom Cleverley gets on. Coming back from Watford, obviously had a really decent season there, and whether he'll sort of be given a chance in the pre-season games and then possibly the start of the season as well remains to be seen. But I think he could be a potential breakout player. Just thinking there, we've actually got the Community Shield too, haven't we? Because obviously Chelsea winning the league and cup, that'll mean we'll play them.
I think even saying that, Steve, I mean, like speaking about just general players making it through the reserve, we've got a really talented group of youngsters at both levels. I mean, the academy players and the reserves. So, I mean, if we're not going to spend money, at least we've got the potential there of maybe two or three, maybe four of those players coming through and making it into the first team as well. I mean, Ben Amos, he's been promoted to sort of for the first team from the reserves as well, following Ben Foster's transfer.
Yeah, but he won't start, will he?
It's good to get him involved, though.
He might start in a few Carling Cup games, yeah, but not.
It's good to get him involved, though, get, sort of like, give him more experience of what it's like to be in and around the first team and things like that. And obviously, there'll be some degree of trust there if he's bringing him into that fold, so.
He might get his chance as well. I mean, you look at Foster. I mean, he did get a chance, let's be honest. I mean, I know it wasn't a massive chance. He wasn't given like a half a season or a full season. But there were games where Ferguson brought him in and he had two or three consecutive performances with obviously Van der Sar being injured. So you never know. That sort of thing can happen again. I know it'll probably take, like Dan says, it'll probably take Kuchak as well, not being available. But if he comes in and does well, Ferguson's the sort of manager where if you play well, you stay in the team. So that could possibly come to light.
You're listening to the redcafe.net podcast.
Well then, guys, we'll move on to look at a few more highlights and some lowlights as well. Dan, what about the victories over Manchester City then? Obviously doing the double over them. Scholes coming up with that last-minute header in the second league game. Rooney's heroics in the Carling Cup as well. He climbed over Carrick's shoulders, didn't he, at one point? Those are a couple of highlights that spring to mind.
Yeah, obviously beating City is very much a highlight. Obviously, the most impressive one, though, was the one at Old Trafford earlier in the season. Obviously, Michael Owen, all his connections with Liverpool, and being a Scouser and all that lot, and he took that chance away absolutely brilliantly, and the whole stadium just went up as one, didn't it? It was unbelievable, really, and a great way to announce yourself as a United player, like he did. You know, that game in general was a fantastic match. Keep getting pegged back, but obviously, you know, cream rises to the top, doesn't it? And United came out on top and thoroughly deserved the win, I think.
I quite liked him. Obviously, it was Mark Hughes in charge at the time, warning about the amount of time and that it then. I think they done it on Sky Sports. They went through and came out all the time that was wasted and said, well, actually, there should have been an extra 30 seconds added on as well.
Yeah, it's what you make of the extra time, though, you know what I mean? I mean, teams like United and Chelsea, they always go right to the very end and they don't give up. Whereas City, once Bellamy scored, once he got the equaliser, they were sitting back. Whereas United were putting all the pressure on. If it was the other way around, who knows? City might have scored in those 5-6 minutes, whatever it was. But they didn't even attempt to, you know. So it's all about mentality, and the winning teams have the bigger mentality. I'm sure City will get there one day when, you know, after they've spent a few more million in the transfer market and all that, they'll buy some better players. I'm actually looking forward to next season and Man City, see who they buy in the summer. Obviously, the World Cup coming up, there's going to be a few players that will shine.
When they do the players of the tournament at the World Cup, just say like a Man City will make a bid for the one, number two, number three. You just basically go down the list until they get as many as they can, probably.
And what did you make of City missing out on the Champions League, Dan? What does that do for the rivalry? I mean, say they got in the Champions League, they could have potentially been a real force next season. You could imagine some of the players they could have been going for who they aren't already. I mean, could have really, really strengthened the rivalry even further, couldn't it?
I think it would have been a good thing if City had got in, to be fair. I wouldn't necessarily have liked it, but I mean, like I say, for the rivalry, it's great. If you imagine if we'd met City in the quarterfinals of the Champions League next year or whatever, it'd be fantastic, especially for the North. Obviously, you know, there's a lot of teams up here that are, you know, in the Champions League, and well, Liverpool they were, but they're not anymore. And obviously now Tottenham have taken advantage and they've joined ourselves, Chelsea, and Arsenal. But I was watching that game, and I mean, no one. Screamed loud enough for me when Crouch scored, but it would have been nice deep down, I think, if we'd have got City in the Champions League.
Of another rival, just looking back at highlights, we talked about the defeat to Liverpool at Anfield, but then having lost as well the season before, or the 4-1 defeat, which was obviously humiliating. To beat them at Old Trafford was obviously a bit special considering what had gone on in the past.
Oh, definitely. I like beating Liverpool, I'm going to be honest. It's probably one of my favourite games of the season when we win, and I absolutely despise it when we lose. But like the whole build up was Fernando Torres against Vidic, and how he absolutely he gave him his I don't know, I can't swear, can I? But yeah, he absolutely took up to pieces the game, like the last season, the 4-1 game, and then obviously, well, we won that game, and Vidic had him in his pocket in a sense, which it was good to see. And obviously, that was maybe becoming a little bit of a, I don't know, a mental block for Vidic as well, because every time he seemed to come up against Fernando Torres, it seemed to be like he was just getting his dinner handed to him, for want of a better expression. But it was great to see, and maybe quite like Liverpool as well. I mean, they've had a horrible season and haven't really played well, but I mean, I think that was one of the better performances against us as a season in a whole. So I mean, if that's the best they can play and we still beat them, so I mean, I was very, very happy with that.
Dan, just want to move on to discuss April, the month of April. Run of three games, I think, effectively killed off the season. We had the draw with Blackburn away, the really disappointing, dull 0-0 draw. Obviously going out to Bayern Munich, and then the 2-1 home defeat to Chelsea as well. So I think that run of three games, I think they were consecutive games as well. I think that effectively killed it off, didn't it?
Yeah, I think it was more so the draw against Blackburn. I mean, we watched it together, didn't we? You know, and it was inept. There was no fight in that game. There was no determination to overcome what was in front of them. And Blackburn played very well defensively, and we just couldn't break them down. Obviously, Valencia had that one golden chance from Berto's pass where, you know, it looked easier for him to score. But I suppose if you wanted one player on that, it wouldn't have been Valencia. You wouldn't have chosen him. It was just disappointing, really. I mean, we deserved the draw, but you know, you've got to be going to Blackburn and winning. I know they've had a very good home record this season, but at that time in the title race, if we win there, I think it's very much in our favour.
Okay, come on then, Dolph. Next season, let's briefly look ahead. What is your ideal outcome? Well, not ideal, but maybe what do you think is a realistic outcome? You are obviously eyeing the Premier League title, but do you think we can make inroads again in Europe?
I think so. I think we should be looking, obviously, to get the Premier League title back first and foremost. And I think generally that's what happens when we do lose it. We look to get, obviously, our bread and butter is the Premier League. We need to win that. But I think the Champions League, I think Fergie really wants a third Champions League to make it undisputed that he is the greatest manager ever in football, ever, that has ever been. But I think realistically, I don't think we'll be able to do it, because I don't think we have the squad unless there is some serious strengthening that goes on. I think the Premier League, I think we can do, because obviously we've got the experience there. Like Scholes, Neville and Giggs have all got contracts, new contracts and things like that. So, I mean, their experience is there, and that is quite telling, as has been the case this season as well. So, and I'd quite like a nice FA Cup run, because it's been a while since we've had a run in FA Cup. Obviously, we got put out from Leeds last season, so that was quite a low point and something that wasn't very appreciated. But I quite like a nice day out at Wembley, because we haven't had one of them in the FA Cup for a little while. So maybe a League and Cup double. Not asking too much, am I?
And Dan Ferguson, he's likely to have his eye on that 19th title as well, isn't he?
Yeah, I think we've got a really good chance of winning the league. I mean, we came close this year, and obviously we just came up short. But I think there's no reason why we can't win it next year. Chelsea will be a year older like we will be. But, I mean, I think if we get some decent players in, and obviously we've got Anderson, who didn't play second half of the season, I think he could have I know I said it last season, but I think that this is his season now to really shine. And I think that he'll come back from his injury, and he'll be a better player for it. It might make him a bit more determined, you know, obviously missing out, and he knows that he would have had a decent chance second half of the season with United, and obviously the World Cup as well he's missed out on. So I think he'll be doubly determined to make his mark at United. Then you've got players like Nani, who's really come on strong last sort of few months, and if he has a good World Cup, then he'll be straight in the starting lineup for next season, I'm sure.
Indeed, just because I was going to actually mention that to both of you guys. I mean, it's a chalk and cheese season really, isn't it? I mean, before Christmas he was absolutely horrible, and then Since January, he's been probably like our player of the season since January. He's been amazing. And the transformation, I mean, let's hope it keeps going. Because, I mean,
I wouldn't say it was that poor in the beginning. I think it was just the fact that he wasn't doing everything consistently. You know, he was either, like you say, he was either bad or very good. and no one could make their mind up what planet he was on. But, I mean, since like January, February, like you say, he's come on leaps and bounds, and he's a really good asset for us now.
I think in Valencia and Nani, we've got two of the most exciting wingers, arguably in Europe, to be fair. Obviously, Bayern have got Robin and Ribery, who are probably two of the most lethal. But in Valencia and Nani, I mean, those two are right up there, aren't they?
I like the fact that Valencia has chipped in with a few goals this season. A lot was made about it last summer before we signed him, that he doesn't score enough goals for Wigan. And obviously, he's stepped up and he's done really well. And to come in and replace Ronaldo, it's not exactly easy, is it? And all the pressure's on him. And I think he's done fantastically well. And Rooney likes playing with him as well, you know. The amount of crosses that and assists that Valencia's put in for Rooney and Berto this season has been it's been tremendous.
You talk about the goals that Valencia's chipped in. Do you think that the midfield, do you think they can step up to the plate and maybe help out Rooney a bit more? Because obviously he was the main man throughout for the season as a whole. And do you think maybe the likes of Fletcher, Carrick, Anderson, Scholes, Hargreaves when he's back, do you think they can start chipping in with a bit more, or do you think there's?
Yeah, I definitely think that. I mean, I think Carrick's capable of getting goals. Fletcher's more of a sort of a run around in midfield, but he's scored a few goals this season as well. Obviously, it's hard to replace the goals that Paul Scholes used to provide, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, and it's like, you know, he was such a good player at getting in that position. and the way we played at that time suited goals down to the ground, but we don't really play that way anymore. We don't seem to have a lot of players running onto the ball, you know, edge of the box when it bounces out, and I don't know why.
I was going to say, you've both sort of highlighted it there, the fact that we don't have, that's the one thing we don't possess, a goal scoring central midfielder that's going to make those late runs in the box and those sort of goals.
You look at Chelsea and they've got Frank Lampard, who you know, got 20 plus again this season. And obviously Gerrard can do it for Liverpool. Fabregas for Arsenal is a goal scoring midfielder, isn't he? So yeah, like you say, we just need that little bit of creativity, that little bit of spark. And obviously, if we bring somebody in like Silva or Joe Cole, I think that we've got a decent chance.
Keep going. Just mentioned Michael Carrick there.
Yeah.
This is the first season at the club he's not won the league, and he's been he's regressed in a sense from sort of the form he showed in his first three seasons. Any explanations for why that is?
No, I think it's hard to explain, really. Like I say, the first three seasons, I thought personally he was one of our better seasons for the three seasons combined. Most consistent player. He was playing in virtually every game. He was getting a lot of assists. He was scoring a few goals as well. And he was, you know, important to how we played. This season, it just seems as though he's not been himself. And, you know, there doesn't seem any confidence in his play. You know, last few seasons, when he gets the ball, he would turn on it and look to pass it straight away. Now he dilly-dallies on it. He's looking up for longer. And, you know, hence giving the ball away more. Obviously he missed that penalty against Burnley, but I can't see that being, you know, the sole reason for having a poor season. But he's in the World Cup squad now, so hopefully he can put that season behind him, you know, have a decent World Cup campaign with England and come back a much better player. I think you know, when you're mentioning players getting sold and Carrick's name is bandied around everywhere, isn't it? But I don't see the point in selling Michael Carrick.
Unless
you get a stupid, you know, bid, you know, of like 20 plus million, I wouldn't sell him.
No, I would agree, Dan. I think we need set midfielders, and to be fair, he's shown he's got quality, and winning the league three seasons in a row in your first three at the club,
it's hard to please everybody all the time. And you know, even a lot of the fans didn't like him when he was winning leagues with us. So you know, he's one of them players that just divides opinion.
You're listening to the redcafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net. Or alternatively, post your opinion on the redcafe.net forums.
Right then, well, we've got a real, real treat for you on the redcafe.net podcast now with the end of season. We've got an interview with a former player in the form of Viv Anderson. So, Dov, I'll leave you to it.
Well, everybody, we have a treat on the redcafe.net podcast. This week we have United legend Viv Anderson on the line. Viv, welcome to the redcafe.net podcast.
Thank you very much. It's new to me, so I'm looking forward to it.
Good stuff. Well, we've got some questions from the guys on the forum.
Yep.
So we'll run through them, and you can give us your thoughts and see where we'll go from there.
Yeah, fine.
Excellent. Our first one is from Maroon Lucifer, and this is probably a question I'm guessing you've been asked a lot in your career. You were the first black player to play for England, and just he wants to know what it sort of meant to you, being the first sort of guy breaking barriers, and how actually England fans treated you at the time as well.
Obviously, it was a big thing at the time, and there was a lot of debate in the papers whether it was going to be Laurie Cunningham, God rest his soul. He was the first black under-21 international. And there was a good debate whether it was going to be me, whether it was going to be Laurie. And this went for many weeks in the press. And to get the nod over Laurie was a great achievement. And I'm very proud and very privileged to be the first at anything is a great achievement, isn't it? So I'm no different to anybody else. And I was treated on the night. Fantastic, you know. I remember getting to the ground and in the middle of the ground, or in the middle of the dressing room, there's a bench with all different telegrams for people who was making a debut or playing for their country, and I got one from the Queen and Elton John and people like that. So it was well perceived all those years back, and the crowd were great. We managed to win the game as well. So all in all, it was a pleasurable night, put it that way. It wasn't a great footballing match, what I remember of it, because one side of the pitch was hard and the other side of the pitch was soft. So you were studs first half and rubbers the second half, and as I say, a cold night, and we managed to win. That's the main important thing, and we moved on from there. It was great.
Excellent stuff. We've got another one. This is from Peter Story, and he wants to know if you feel that you get the credit that you deserve. He says that you're probably the best right back to play for England in the modern era, and he doesn't think you actually get the recognition that you merit. So, I mean, what would you say to that?
Well, it's very nice of him to say that. It's very difficult to judge yourself against your peers. You know, some really good fullbacks. Phil Neville was a really good fullback. You look at his medal tally for Liverpool and what he won at that football club was fantastic. Mickey Mills, who was another one in front of me, who played very well in that very famous Ipswich team. Gary Steele was very similar. You know, so it's very, very difficult for me to say, oh yeah, I was better than him or better than him. I mean, when I started off in this footballing career, I said if I could play for my country, that would be the ultimate, you know, for any footballer to play for your country. And I ended up getting 30 caps. So I was very pleased to get one, and to get 30. I'm more than delighted.
Definitely. And we have one from Phil Acro.
Yeah.
And he says, it's obviously Sir Alex Ferguson's first signing at United.
Yeah.
And obviously that started somewhat of a golden age for United. Is there anything different about playing for a team of that size compared to some of the other clubs you played for? Obviously, you're at Nottingham Forest, two-time European Cup winner, and Arsenal as well. Is there something different about United?
Yeah, I mean, as you say, I started at Nottingham Forest to, you know, average crowd of 19,000 when Brian Clough took over and then took us to back-to-back European Cups. And then you move to Arsenal. And once you go to the Arsenal, you're always compared. The first thing you say, well, you'll never be as good as the treble winners, and or the double winners, sorry. And you're always compared to people like that. But when you go to Manchester United, when they say, well, you'll never be good as Bestlaw and Charlton, that is a big jump from being double winners to Bestlaw and Charlton. It is a tradition and a passion about Manchester United that's second to none. And the supporters are very, very passionate about the game, and they've seen it from the Bestlaw, Charlton era up to the modern day. So they've got a good handle on how Manchester United should play, what they should be doing and what they shouldn't be doing. So it's big shoes to fill, but it's a fantastic, fantastic football club, and I think it's what you talk about Barcelona and Real Madrid. They've got a lot of tradition and passion, but I still think Manchester United on a big FA Cup day or whatever is still the best in the world.
Indeed, and he also has a little question just at the end there. He says, do you think you could mark Lionel Messi?
Listen, to mark Lionel Messi, before you go out in the dressing room, you stick a hammer down your sock, and then just before you go out the pitch, you hit him on the head with it. So I think that's the only way to mark him. I think now, for me, he's the best player in the world. I know Wayne Rooney's done really, really well and will be up there as well, but I think Lionel Messi is undoubtedly, at this day, at this moment in time, the best player in the world. So you either get a gun and shoot him or hit him in the head with an hammer.
Oh, those are certainly two ways to stop him. We've got another one from Red Aaron. This is, as I say, sticking with your United career.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask about, you missed it on the cup final. Paul Insock, he played in your place.
Yeah.
What did you think of Sir Alex Ferguson's decision to do that? And what was your response to the sort of that decision that he made?
I had played up to the quarterfinals that year and got injured at Sheffield United. And then fought my way back to try and get fit to try and play in the final, and then obviously made the decision to play Paul Ince for me, and I wasn't even one of the subs that day. So obviously, I mean, you're obviously disappointed at the time, but if you look back on my career, there's not many times I've been disappointed. I'm very fortunate to say some of the things I've won and leagues and this, that and the other. So at the end of the day, at the time, very annoyed, very disappointed, but pleased for the lads because they managed to win. But on a personal note, you'd like to play in a cup final. I'd never played in a cup final prior to that, and it would have been nice to have played in it. But I understand these reasons why, and it turns out to be the right reason, because we end up winning the game, and with Lee Martin scoring and going on, as you say, the glory years started just after that. So disappointed, but at the end of the day, it's for the team, and the team managed to win. It's for the club and the team. That's what it's all about, really.
Indeed, excellent stuff. And we've got a one from Surf and JDMUFC, both of them sort of want to know the differences between Clough and Fergie, obviously playing under both. I mean, what were the sort of defining traits of both managers in your eyes?
Listen, that's the question I get asked more than anything else, because obviously you know that I work with both of them. I would say both of them are very, 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 very strict in what they want, how a team should play, what's expected of them every given Saturday afternoon. They're very, very passionate men, you know, in regards to the footballing terms. And they asked me, who would you choose between the two? Now, it's a really, really difficult decision. Sir Alex has won 25 trophies in 26 years or whatever it is. But I just say Bancroft just wins, and I give my reasons are for we were a provincial club, no superstars, just working like team, and they go back to back European Cups, which is very difficult to do, and on average 19,000 crowd. No, we didn't have a training ground. We cheered that with the cows. It was really, you know, every day was a challenge for that football club and for them to achieve what they achieved at that time. Because you remember the great Liverpool team around at the time who were winning everything. So to get what they did in that time is really, really difficult. And I think it was down to the manager. So I would say if I had to choose between the two, and it would be really, really, really difficult for that short space of time, which was 4 or 5 years, I think Bancroft just picked Sir Alex, but very, 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 very tiny. But
we've got another one here. This is from Fred the Red. He asks, this is more about modern day footballers.
Yeah.
He's saying that he thinks they've got life too easy, given the vast amounts of money and things like that. Team loyalty, commitment's not as important as it used to be.
Right.
And how do you feel about footballers? Do you think they're overpaid? Do you get value for money? And just what are your general thoughts on that?
For me, I'll give you a great story. I played with a lad called Einar Oss. He was came from Bayern Munich to Nottingham Forest. We played up in Sunderland. He gets the ball off the goalkeeper, knocks it back to the goalkeeper, turns round, falls over. There was nobody within 25 yards of him. Falls over. Everybody in the stadium laughs. Even our own players laughed at him, and he never played football again. So you think, it's a short career. And I'm not one of these old footballers who think, well, they're vastly overpaid. Yeah, clearly, you know, when you're earning £150,000, £175,000 a week, a lot of money. But at the end of the day, somebody said to you, you're worth this, I'll prepare to give you that. And 9 times out of 10, if somebody says to you, in your job, here, I'm going to give you double, treble, quadruple what you are now, I don't think many people would say no. And footballers are exactly the same, you know. Somebody offered it him, and they're going to take it because it's a very, very, very short career. You never know from one day to the next what's going to happen. And so you have to safeguard yourself for that, for the eventuality. So eventually you're gonna not be able to play, whether it be injury or whether it be just old age. So I say good luck to them. I just think the people who are giving them that sort of money have to take stock, because I think it's gone too silly now. But if they're prepared to give it them, good luck to them.
Yeah, I would have to agree. If somebody decided to give me treble the amount of money, I would take it.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And we've got one about the current United squad. This is from Mad. And he says, where do you feel that United squad needs to strengthen to get the title back from Chelsea?
I think we definitely need another centre-forward. I know we've signed this lad from Mexico, and you've still got the Welbecks and the Machenas and all these sort of people coming in. I still think we need another experienced one to run a side, because it's a lot on Wayne Rooney's shoulders and Berbatov's shoulders. So I think we could do with another centre-forward. I think a centre-half, footbacks-wise, I think we're not bad. I think another midfield player would go down really well, box-to-box, who's going to get you, you know, like a Lampard, that's going to get you 20-odd goals from midfield to help ease the load throughout the team. So if I was going to say certain positions, I would say definitely a centre-forward, another midfield player, and another utility defender that could play full-back, could play centre-back. Somebody could fit in all the different positions just to cover us, and I think we'll be strong men, and I think we'll give them a good fight for their money next season.
I hope so. I think a lot of us hope so. And we've got a final question. This is from Count Duckula. We've got some interesting people on this forum. And he says, obviously, you've lived through sort of racist attitudes in football and things like that, and obviously you're a key figure in confronting these attitudes. But what do you see as the greatest challenge facing football right now?
I think it's the modern technology. I think whether we bring it in for certain incidents. I'm not a lover of stop, start, stop, start. You know, are we going to bring it in for offsides? Are we going to bring it in for pushing in the box, grabbing and all these sort of things? Because football is about people making decisions. Sometimes they're right and sometimes they're wrong. But I think when the ball crosses the line, there should be a camera. Somebody looks straight away and said, it crossed the line, goal. You know, I think we have to draw the line there. I think other stuff I'm not over keen on, but I think when it's such a big decision like it is when it's crossed the line or not, I think it should be bought in for that.
Before we let you go, we've got one more question from you. You've got your autobiography out. It's Viv Anderson, First the Money Equals.
Yeah.
Is there any overriding memory that's in the book that maybe you think is maybe the best moment of your career or something like that? Just one of your favourite moments throughout your career?
As I said earlier, I've been very, very fortunate to have a very good career and winning leagues and winning European Cups and winning this, that, the other. But my overriding memory would be of, you know, Forest coming up. It's like Newcastle coming up next season and winning the league. We know it never happened. Forest have managed to do that. And I think to win your, whatever league you're in, I think that proves that you've been consistent throughout the 9 months or however long the season is. That means it's not a fluke. Like in cup competitions, you can go to the FA Cup, you know, don't play very well, but get to the final and maybe win it. In a league, you've got to be consistent week in, week out, day in, day out, to be at the top of the league. That's why Chelsea are where they are. It's no fluke. They've been the most consistent team throughout the season, and that's why they won it in the end, you know, by beating Manchester United. So I think the overriding thing in the book, it's a hard thing to do to win any league, and I think which comes through the book is that you have to be dedicated and you have to work hard.
Indeed, I'd have to agree. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on, Viv.
You're welcome.
We shall hopefully get you on at some point in the future, but again, thanks very much.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Well, that just about signals the end of another season. Well, the first season of the RedCafe.net podcast. Just want to say on behalf of all of us on the podcast, a massive thanks to you all for listening throughout the season. And hopefully we'll be back again to bring you another set of shows over the 2010-2011 campaign. So once again, thanks very much for all your support. And well, that just leaves us to say have a fantastic summer, enjoy the World Cup, and we'll hopefully see you again next season.